Thank you, Ambassador, Excellencies, colleagues. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. And I want to thank Ambassador Massari for hosting this panel and for this question. We know that in humanitarian emergencies, women and children suffer first and they suffer most. Today, we estimate that 400 million children across the globe are living in or fleeing conflict zone. That's about one in every five of the world's children. There are more children in need of humanitarian assistance today than in the last 8 decades. In 2021 and 2022, there were 5,000 reported attacks on education and incidents of military use of schools and universities, while over 1,000 confirmed attacks on healthcare took place in emergency-affected countries and fragile settings in 2021. So preventing violations and responding to women and children's protection needs during humanitarian emergencies are of utmost concern to UNICEF. This means providing access to social welfare and justice services, interim care, and family tracing for accompanied children, women and girls, safe spaces, and GBV response services, all of which play a vital role in children and women's well-being. If you allow a parenthesis, last year across 109 countries, UNICEF supported 4.7 million children who had experienced violence to receive health, social work, justice, or law enforcement services working with partners. We reached more than 5 million women and children in 65 countries with GBV risk mitigation interventions, with the number of children, adolescent, and caregivers provided with community-based mental health and psychosocial support services more than doubling from 12 million in 2021 to 25.2 million in 2022. Nada spoke about Haiti, and I also want to zero in on Haiti, where acts of armed violence against schools and school children, including shooting, ransacking, looting, and kidnapping, have increased dramatically over the past year. So in these contexts, what can we do? We can promote safe access and return to learning, including through the provision of school supplies and advocacy to prevent and end attacks on education. We can also promote the use of cash transfers that are provided to enroll vulnerable children and improve educational infrastructure and capacity management for teachers. So drawing from these figures, drawing from that experience and the world we're in, what can be done to better ensure protection going forward? 6 points. First, place women and children and their protection at the center of humanitarian action. Immediate assessments and continuous analysis of the impact of conflict and emergency on children's well-being and vulnerability, including their access to education and health, recognizing that protection is life-saving, so that all emergency needs assessment systematically include conflict analysis, protection risks, threats, and vulnerabilities. Working so that protection needs can be properly assessed and responses targeted and prioritized. Second, focus on violence prevention and reinforce protection at the onset of crises. Effectively addressing protection risks means the UN and partners need to be present early on, as the situation currently in Sudan. Protection concerns in humanitarian settings, notably for women and children, often initially spike at the onset of a crisis, and it is fundamental to ensure protection is prioritized early on. Third, addressing protection risks, needs, and challenges across all sectors of humanitarian action. Protection needs to cut across education, water and sanitation, and healthcare, among other sectors. Education and medical facilities are designed safe spaces where we provide a sense of normalcy, and they serve as a starting point to identify the most vulnerable children to receive protection services. If we address gender-based violence in emergencies, that includes safety audits in sectors such as water, sanitation, and hygiene, education and nutrition. It also means the economic and social empowerment of women and girls, including tuition for basic literacy and numeracy skills, and advice on income-generating activities. Fourth, intensify our advocacy with all actors that bear influence over actors perpetrating violations, including by systematically speaking out in a principled manner when rights have been infringed. Fifth, reinforce engagement with parties, including non-state armed groups and de facto authorities. The colleague spoke about the situation in Afghanistan, on safe and sustained access to person in need in hard-to-reach area, on release of children, on action plans, and other measures to stop grave violations. And then six, lean into the nexus by recognizing that social welfare and justice systems can serve to protect children and women and should be invested in and strengthened, including in emergency and fragile contexts. In the same way that we have health systems, we have education systems, there are social welfare and justice systems that make a difference when it comes to protection. I think the message from this panel is we must better protect women and children today so they can grow up to create a more peaceful world for future generations. I think it's something we're all committed to. Thank you.